Now, here's Pat Campbell on Talk Radio 1170 KFAQ.
Seven past the hour. Well, it's been about 18 months now since the president signed a whopping stimulus package equaling $790 billion back in February of 2009. It's 18 months since he did that. And the question we're going to look at this morning is, well, how's that working out for you? Here to talk about it with us this morning is Curtis Greco. He's the author of the Blind Vision books and founder of the Imperfect Messenger Foundation. Curtis, welcome to the Pat Campbell Show.
Hey, Pat. Thank you for the invite.
Well, let's talk about the stimulus package. It's we put the money out there, but it doesn't seem to be working. How's this working out for the United States? Is it a good thing, bad thing? In retrospect, knowing what we know now, was it the right thing to do?
Doesn't take much to look at the environment, the economic environment in the United States and on the global level, and come to the ultimate conclusion that it was just an absolute devastating process. I mean, the reality is that at the present time, we're at $1.3 trillion in expenditures just on the stimulus package alone, $11.7 trillion globally in the U.S., considering what the feds have dumped into the mortgage markets, you know, the troubled asset relief program, the Federal Reserve into stabilizing the financial markets, et cetera. I think the big mistake is to think that government can actually be a stimulus and operate in that level when, in fact, it really truly can't. Economics, as we all know, whenever you hear comments such as the U.S. is such a vibrant economic engine, what most people don't realize is that it occurs despite what government does, which should beg the question, then what component of the U.S. economy is that driving force?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the native economy. That's the people. And the stimulus packages don't direct any energy into the functional and fundamental demands of that component of the economy. Look at the jobs. We're seeing numbers, you know, hovering in the 9.7% range, but in reality, it's closer to 18-19%. When you take and look at the effects of bankruptcies in the United States, small businesses, the self-employed, then you really see that we're looking at a truly devastating economic outlook when you consider those numbers that take the unemployment numbers up into the 25-30% range. It's an issue that I think we need to address, and the functions of the books really is frankly personally my attempt at directing or attempting to direct the conversation at a critical point, and that is not what's wrong, but what is it that we need to do to correct it.
Are you surprised by the lack of progress from the president's plan? I mean, we threw $790 billion, and we really don't have a lot to show for it. Shouldn't we have gotten something for that kind of money?
You would absolutely think so, correct? I mean, you know, when you look at it and you think about the idea of throwing that amount of money into the economy, one has to ask the question, why isn't it working? Well, again, it has to do with the issue of it not being directed with any sort of element of leadership. Leadership, I mean, think about, you know, who the president surrounds himself with. None of these gentlemen, none of these folks have ever met a payroll. None of them have ever operated a business successfully from the ground up. It's unreasonable for us to think that in the absence of a critical and functional experience on these levels, to expect that government really has that ability to do it. And that's what we talk about in the book series. I mean, there's, you know, we can talk about the three books that are out right now. There's the first book, which was We Hold These Truths. Book two is Value Given, Value Received. And book three is Valor in Prosperity. And Valor in Prosperity goes to the heart of the question by submitting to the dialogue, to the conversation, critical points that we can look at in generating a functional response to the economic issue. And that's where I think we need to go.
We are talking with Curtis Greco. He's the author of the Blind Vision books and founder of the Imperfect Messenger Foundation. We're talking about the stimulus package, $790 billion, 18 months after the fact. We don't have a whole lot to show for it. So throwing money at the problem isn't the solution. What is the solution? We've had tough economic times in this country before. How have we overcome bad economic times in the past?
The most specific way to look at this is to look at post-World War II. The U.S. economy was in the doldrums leading into World War II, and as it came out of World War II, the U.S. economy exploded primarily due to two fundamental truths. One was the buildup of industrial capacity that the U.S. created as part of the armaments and the arming of the country for that conflagration. Second was the demand that was latent as a result of the post-World War II era as the troops and the economy came out of that environment. And there's the critical point, is to look at it and think about what drove that. Well, it was driven by the public. It was driven by the consumer and consumerism. Now, whether or not consumerism is the answer is not the point. The point is the productive capacity. People were employed. Money was flowing. People were having had disposable income. You know, another way of looking at it is to consider what's happening in the housing market. The government is attempting to resuscitate the housing market. The only way it's been able to do it is to by tossing money into the market. The moment the credits, first-time homebuyer credits, new homebuyer credits, the moment those are suspended or exhausted, what happens to the real estate market? It collapses. It's not able to sustain itself. So the point being is what needs to happen is we need to focus on rebuilding the idea of what constitutes a native economy. How do we do that? Some ideas that I've looked at and developed some analytical commentaries on, and again, they appear in the series. Number one is to reconsider the effects of the tax code on the U.S. economy. That's number one, to look at the effects that trade agreements have had on the U.S. economy. And number three, to look at the massive debt load on a national level, not only at the federal level, which is in the $14 trillion on book, $14 trillion plus on book, but then look at also what the debt load on the state and local governments, presently in approximately $3.5 trillion. That debt load is massive. It is actually suppressing the economic growth by redirecting economic wealth just to maintaining or subsidizing or debt servicing that debt load.
I want to take you back to that World War II model. Again, we're talking with Curtis Greco here. You mentioned the two components, industry and demand. We're missing one of those components, industry. Our manufacturing base, correct me if I'm wrong here, but our manufacturing base that we had, you know, coming out of World War II, much of that has either gone A, south of the border, or B, overseas.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
So how do we do that? How do we style ourselves after our World War II comeback when we're missing a key component, industry?
Well, and absolutely the case. I mean, the argument is goes to the point of globalism, the idea that you can export a country's economic engine offshore and somehow that's going to make a country more competitive in the global market. Well, we can clearly see what that's done. It's not only a fallacy, not only a fallacious argument, theoretical and practical application, it's flawed. You have China now having in the position where they're capacity has been entirely subsidized by the U.S. consumer and U.S. financial resources. So that's great for China, and also is very good if you're a U.S. bank or an investor. Mm-hmm. The problem is that you've, in effect, excised the capacity domestically for the U.S. economy to sustain itself. So the argument is not true to say that we are in a global economy because it's the evolution of economics. That's not the case. We are a global economy because that was the design and the intention of it. And you can go back to the late 80s when the GATT, WTO, and then later on the NAFTA treaties were created.
Well, how do you turn that around, though, once, you know, it's out there? I mean, can you go back to are we talking about protectionism? What are we talking about?
Well, you know, protectionism is one of those arguments that's used as a defense against having a native economy because they'll say, well, you know, the protectionism's not good. Well, that's absolutely not the case because if you take and reverse the argument about protectionism, then anybody who benefits in an economic environment intuitively and logically is a protectionist. If you don't have the ability to sustain an economic model without the idea of protecting your economic ambitions, then you have no economic, you have no way of actually generating the economy because what in effect has happened, you've used the argument of protectionism selectively. How do you reverse it? Well, you know, ultimately, you know, this is not an easy decision for the U.S., whether it's on the public level or the government level. To reverse it is going to require us to go back to look at what works. What works is a vibrant economic engine where you become an economic, a driven economic engine that offers products and services that the public, or in this case, the globe, demands.
Let me jump in here because I want to cover a couple things. We're talking with Curtis Greco again. I'm watching one of the financial programs either on the Fox Business News Network or Fox News yesterday, They talk about the fact that the banks have the money, but they're not lending it to anybody. That businesses have money, but they're not expanding it. That consumers have money, but they're not spending it. So if I pull Barack out today and put you in, okay, what's the very first thing you're going to do to stimulate our economy?
I would first move, go right after the Internal Revenue Code, and restructure the Internal Revenue Code away from taxing productive wealth, specifically on the individual level. Household incomes, $350,000 and below, you have to take the tax burden off the public, provided that the public self-funds their own retirement plan, self-funds their medical plan. You have got to get productive assets back into the process of being productive wealth generating.
So you're not going to tax me, but I got to come up with my own Social Security and my own medical care.
Well, wouldn't that be, I mean, if let's face facts, Pat, you go back to the fundamentals of what lies back of a Republican form of government, and that is that it has personal responsibility as its key component. You know, that's a topic for another time about going into that discussion, but that's number one. And then also, I mean, what is it that we have done to a U.S. economy?
Yeah, here's the thing. Restructuring the tax code is not something you're going to be able to do overnight, and it's not something that we can quickly kick in. What could Barack Obama, if he really wanted to put the best interest of this country first and stimulate the economy today, what could he do right now that would make a huge difference?
First thing he could do is go to the Internal Revenue Code and the corporate structure and reverse the effects of the tariffs and the trade packages by getting corporate America back into reinvesting into productive capability here in the United States. That's number one. You have to go back to that fundamental rule of what constitutes an economic engine. The reason why corporations are flush with cash is not because they're doing so well. It's because their burden for being productive is only based on passive income. All of their productivity is offshore. They're collecting revenue off of the results of an economic engine that is not occurring here in the United States.
What drove those companies away? Was it the tax code, or was it labor cost, or was it a combination?
Well, you know, you can say that there. Yes, number one, labor costs got out of control, largely driven by the demands placed on corporate engines to subsidize social issues, whether it be the union, the effect of unions, or the effect of government intervention into the private sector, putting these massive burdens on compliance of whether it be EPA or OSHA requirements and so on and so forth. I mean, to start a business here in the United States today, particularly in the state of California and any of the states that are heavily burdened with large population bases, no corporation in their right mind is going to invest in a state when their profit, their economic model has to first overcome approximately 35% to 40% operating expenses just simply because you're doing business in a state such as California. So, yes, the core companies were, in effect, driven offshore because of these multiple components. But also, it's also important to remember that these economic models, where banking on a global is a global economic model, to think that the U.S. or the Federal Reserve is a domestic banking model is absolutely absurd. You know, banking today is a global economic event with all the central banks around the world. So whenever you look at it as an engine, as a monetary component of an economy, you have to think of the consequences that the banking system drives these investments offshore. Think about it this way. If you look at China, one of the reasons why the U.S. has been so hard-pressed to get China to allow the yuan to float with global currencies is to remember that a 20% adjustment upward in the yuan in value has a consequent effect of doing what? Well, it creates a 20% reduction in the value of the debt load that China holds on U.S. sovereign debt. So it makes great sense to understand why, you know, the globalism concept from a banking standpoint is so powerful, because it gives a further field of plunder of the banking system globally from an investment engine to be able to go around the country and basically use currency fluctuations to adjust economic issues on a global scale. Look at what happened to Greece. 115% of their GDP is debt load. You allow a great portion of that was created because of the fluctuation between the euro and the dollar. So there is this issue that is probably aggravated, well, definitely aggravated because of this global banking model. So going back to your original question of what do you do, again, you have to drive the engine backwards. You have to, not backwards in reverse, but you have to restore it. let's face facts, why is it the fundamental component of an economic downturn in the U.S., particularly in the housing market, is not because people don't need a place to live anymore. It's because their income is not keeping pace with the cost of sustaining it. You have an economic model in the United States that's built on the idea that you can have a service-based economy. Well, how can you have a service-based economy if you don't have the economic muscle to sustain it? Sooner or later, if you put two real estate brokers in a room selling each other's houses to one another, making their living off the commissions they earn off of one another, sooner or later, one of them is going to end up with the bulk of the wealth, unless you infuse it with something addition.
Makes sense.
All right.
Yeah, so, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I'll close with a final comment. You know, you can believe that you can feed people by, you know, cutting up by this concept of spreading the wealth, but sooner or later, if you take a pizza, sooner or later you can slice it up into incrementally and infinitely smaller pieces of pizza. But sooner or later, you're going to say, well, yeah, we're feeding a great deal many more people. Well, that may be true, but you're also just simply causing them to starve a little slower.
Curtis Greco, author of the Blind Vision books and founder of the Imperfect Messenger Foundation. If people want to find out more, where do we send them?
www.theimperfectmessenger.com. The site hosts the blog series as well as hyperlinks to Amazon and the online booksellers for the books. And, of course, they're available at your local bookstores as well.
Curtis, thank you so much.
Pat, thanks. What a treat. Take care.
Have a great day.